Welcome to Postscript, the American Society for Pharmacy Law's podcast. My name is Henry Hine, and I'll be your host here today. The American Society for Pharmacy Law, ASPL, has an annual conference in the fall entitled Developments in Pharmacy Law. We focus with presenters, experts, and speakers providing the latest and most important developments in pharmacy law each and every year. We have over 24 speakers presenting at the conference this year, and that we were featuring, we have Arkansas Lieutenant Governor Leslie Rutledge coming as our primary speaker, our featured speaker. Another featured speaker is Al Carter. He's the Executive Director of the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy. All are welcome to come to our conference. This conference is being held in San Antonio, Texas. It's November 2nd through 5th. Come on down. Attendees can receive up to 15 hours of CE in pharmacy, up to 15 hours of CE in law, and if you'd like and need, you can get 15 hours in each pharmacy and law. Registration for the conference is available at ASPL.org. In this podcast series, we feature a few of the conference speakers with two main goals in mind. First, we'd like to go a little deeper into their background, where they are now and how they got there, rather than the amount you see in the agenda. Secondly, we'd like to get a little tidbit of their presentation, hopefully to entice us to come on to the conference. Today, we are honored to have as our guest, Monet Stanford. She is going to present in the area of biosimilars, and the title is, I believe, let me see if I get this right, Monet, The Transition of Biosimilars from Provider Administered to Pharmacy Dispensed. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, sir.
All righty. Let's go into your background a little bit. Where are you now in your career and how have you got there?
Sure. And first, of course, thank you for having me on the show. I'm really excited to see everybody in San Antonio in 2 months. But right now, I serve as Director of Policy at the Association for Accessible Medicines. That is the trade association here in Washington, D.C. for generic and biosimilar manufacturers. We're actually also the Biosimilars Council, which serves as the trade association solely for biosimilar manufacturers. So like any trade association, we represent our members on the Hill and states and regulatory agencies, including CMS and the FDA. And then we also work on the overall narrative for our industry. So our members include some bigger guys like Teva and Sandoz, who you may have heard of before, but then also some smaller generic and biosimilar manufacturers, those that manufacture active pharmaceutical agreements, and all of the supply chain actors in between. In terms of my role specifically, I work on the policy team. I work on issues that fall under both public and private payers, but we primarily focus on public payers. So that's your Medicare, your Medicaid, a little bit of 340B. We serve as the primary resource for our staff in terms of interpretation of federal legislation and regulation and guidances and how that impacts our industry. I help lead our efforts as we contribute to written testimony for congressional committees. We work on legislative strategy with our lobbyists. We author comment letters in response to CMS and FDA and other regulatory agencies. We're really excited about a series of policy papers that we've authored. I will shamelessly plug our most recent generic and biosimilar savings report, which was released just at the top of the month. In that report, we have a myriad of examples of different ways that generic and biosimilar medicines have saved the U.S. money. They've saved up to $408 billion in 2022 alone. So I recommend all of our listeners go to accessiblemeds.org to check that out.
Wow.
And then beyond those responsibilities, I manage the content and control for policy, research, and data-driven projects just to really optimize the narrative around cost-saving generic and biosimilar medicines.
So how did you get here? Wow, what a what a position.
Thank you. That was a lot. But whose job is it? But for me, like you, I'm a pharmacist, and I'm really happy to have started my career as a pharmacist. I started with the community pharmacy residency. I'm a boilermaker at Purdue University. There, we just worked on both, you know, your typical dispensing, but also those clinical services that really take our pharmacists on the other side of the pharmacy counter. So we were working on, of course, the diabetes self-management coursework. But the pharmacy I work with, Fagan Pharmacy, we also had a lot of innovative clinical programs such as bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, We had a breast milk donation clinic for mothers that were experiencing HIV/AIDS. We had different programs so we could register individuals for Medicare Advantage on site. That was something I hadn't seen a pharmacist involved in. And then also, telling my age a little bit, but this was around the time that pharmacists were starting to receive eligibility to administer vaccinations outside of the pharmacy setting. That was kind of where I, as they say, got bitten by the policy bug. Because when I started my program, there weren't really any rules and regulations to formalize some of those external clinical programs that pharmacists could offer. But it was through some of the committees that I work with the Indiana Pharmacist Alliance, that pushed some of those across. They were passed, and right before my eyes, I saw the community change. By the next flu season, pretty much the flu had reduced in that particular area of Indiana by 25 to 35%. I'd like to say it was all me, but it was certainly the stroke of the pen that really got that across the finish line. So I was sold not only as a pharmacist, but as, you know, a community participant on how just changing an and to a or could really impact patient lives.
Wow, that's amazing. So how did you jump from there now to where you are? You know, there's still some
gap. Yeah. Yep. So after transitioning from Purdue University in Fig and Pharmacy, I then completed a fellowship with the National Association of Chain Drugstores. And it was there where I was really ingratiated in them. Oh, this is real work. There are real decisions being made, and pharmacists are important individuals that need to be at the table. So during my program at NACDS, we had a lot of program management, but I also had my exposure to Congress and the Hill and how regulatory agencies operate. From there, after my one-year program at NACDS, I transitioned to Kaiser Permanente, which was such a blessing at the time because not only is Kaiser Permanente an administrator of healthcare, so we have pharmacists working both in your traditional community pharmacy setting, but also in ambulatory care settings. They're also pharmacies, brick-and-mortar pharmacies, and they're also administrators of healthcare, of insurance. So I was working for an insurance agency, a pharmacy, and an operations role at the same time. And in that role, I focused on anything you can think of from a regulatory affairs perspective. I wrote collaborative practice agreements, which was really exciting. I helped evaluate their pharmacy and therapeutics committee contracts. I worked externally with their PBMs. Anything you can name, I did, or at least I believe so. But that was my last role before my current role I'm in now.
That is just amazing. See, this is exciting for me because to hear the different career paths in the area that we are for pharmacy and lawyers is just amazing. That is great. Wow.
I must commend ASPL for always being a resource for me along my journey. When I was a student X amount of years ago, I won't say how many, I really wasn't sure that, you know, the paths that were presented to me at the time aligned with what my personal skills and capabilities were. ASPL always piqued my interest. I know there's an increasing effort to involve student pharmacists in the programs that they offer. But for me, I, you know, RSVP'd for the conferences. I met a ton of people. And those are, I'll say, the titans of the industry that have really guided me to where I am today.
Well, and I'll do a little piece. So in 1982, I won the ASPL National Writing Award.
Congratulations.
As a law student. Oh, and I think it changed my career.
Yep.
I found myself at the White House years later. I mean, it just changed my career, in my opinion. That's why I'm here. I'm a retired guy, and here I am giving back to ASPL. So anyway, that's a side piece. Let's jump into your presentation.
Sure.
And what is the title of that presentation?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about where we are in the biosimilars community. So I'll just step back a little bit and just share some nuts and bolts when it comes to biosimilars, and then I'll drop the bomb of why I'm so excited right now.
Okay.
So there are, of course, your typical oral small molecule. Those are your pills that you typically see dispensed. That's 90% of prescriptions dispensed. And then there are your biologics. Those are medications that are produced from living organisms. They're generally larger, more complex molecules. That's why there's the small molecule market and the larger molecule market. But either way, biologics are brand drugs approved and regulated by the FDA. They've been on the market for many, many years. Not until 2015 have we had the first biosimilar. Now, biosimilar is similar to what a generic drug is to a brand, but there are some key differences that often bring about confusion. A biosimilar is also produced from a living organism. It's also generally a larger, more complex molecule, but in comparison to its reference product, which will be the brand product that the product is mimicking, it's the exact same product that has no clinically meaningful differences. But because it's a living organism, there's no possible way for it to be considered identical, which is why the term biosimilar was created. They're also approved and regulated by the FDA. They have no differences in their side effect profiles or their clinical. Now, where we are now is exciting because for years, since 2015, when the first biosimilar entered the market, they had typically only been dispensed in the medical benefit setting. So that's the inpatient setting where a physician, some type of PA or a nurse administers the product to the patient directly at the site of care. So we've had about 12 different molecules in that space since 2015. Within the different therapeutic areas, there are varying levels of utilization, but overall, biosimilars are being adopted at a fairly regular pace in the medical benefit. Now we're in 2023, and it's really exciting because for the first time, we're bringing biosimilars to the pharmacy dispense market. So that means there are different motivating factors on how biosimilar utilization transitions into this new market. So in the pharmacy dispense market, we have your ever so popular Humira with its first few biosimilars entering the market. So that's one case study that we're going to look at in this presentation. And then we have the first ever biosimilar insulin entering the pharmacy dispense market. That's another case study that we're looking at. I will caveat this in that, as mentioned, these pharmacy dispense biosimilars are just entering the market in July of 2023. So it's very immature to make any final definitions on how that's going. But I would like to start the conversation at ASPL in November, chronicling what has happened for the past eight years in the medical benefit market, and then starting to historically note some of what we expect to happen in the pharmacy dispense market for years to come.
Wow, you have piqued my interest. I am excited to hear this coming, and we'll love to see you there. I'm not even going to follow up with questions. That's beautiful. Wow, okay. Exciting. So let me just move on then. If anybody wants to get a hold of you, we do offer you the opportunity to give out some contact information, whether at email, phone, LinkedIn, or however you want to be available. Would you like to be available to anybody?
I'd love to be available, particularly for anyone who's interested in the world where being a pharmacist and working in the policy and government relations space intersect. So I don't have social media, but you can find me on LinkedIn under Monet Stanford. I'm M-O-N-E-T. Last name Stanford, like the university, and I'd be happy to set up a conversation with anyone who's interested in talking about this, generics or biosimilars.
Very good. We thank you so much. We're honored to have you come. I'm going to be happy to shake your hand at the meeting, and so let's go ahead and move on. I thank you for coming on board here today, Monet, and I thank the listeners for coming and listening to Postscript, the American Society for Pharmacy Law's podcast. Again, our fall conference, Developments in Pharmacy Law, is November 2 through 5 in San Antonio, Texas. To see the agenda of the conference and or register for the conference, please go to aspl.org. This is Henry Hine, your host, and we thank you for listening.